Hello and welcome to the Vote Her podcast, because when you vote, great things can happen. Hi, I'm Mara Davis, and I couldn't be happier to be with my ladies. I am a media person and a content consumer, but right now I want to learn about what's happening at the Capitol.
And I do too. So my name is Jen Jordan. I'm not at the Capitol, but Terry Nulowitz is, and she's ready to spill the tea.
And I am State Representative Terry Nulowitz, House District 42 in Cobb, and I've been at the Capitol for the past 3 weeks. We just finished Legislative Day 14. So, yeah, I've got the tea.
Okay, so I want to set the scene here of what's going on. Number one, we haven't done an episode because we've all been busy. Some have been traveling. Jen has been in court. Terry has been on the Hill. Is it the Hill in Georgia? It is on a hill. No.
It's the Gold Dome.
Okay, she's been at the Gold Dome. Jen has a bad audio connection on her end and a snorting dog. Mr. Bean, so if we hear it, I have, I don't know if you can hear the construction on my street. It's just like concrete being drilled. And Terry is also getting an echo. So if we're a little bit off, we have to give you full disclosure that we all should have not done this podcast, but we're going with God. It's been too long and we love each other so much and we love you, listener. So let's go. Terry.
Was that listener singular?
Terry, I want to know about everything that's happening. The governor, the anti-Semitism resolution got a lot of press. Who's been bothering you? What's happening?
So my email inbox is full, as it normally is by day 14. We started on the 8th of January. We have already lost our rules chairman. This was awful. This is the worst thing that's happened really so far, is that Chairman Richard Smith from Columbus, the chair of the Rules Committee, passed away late Monday night. He was 78 years old. His funeral is going to be on Monday, I guess, probably when this podcast drops. But it is an awful thing. And it's also been a very unmooring thing. This is the fourth death that we've had at the Capitol in the past 5 years. We have lost three rules chairmen, and then, of course, Speaker Ralston. So it's a lot. It's a lot.
It was really shocking too when he died. Like, I remember, like, I saw the tweet and I thought, wow, this was not something you guys were expecting. And so then everybody voted, you're going to take the day off next week for the funeral.
Right. We have changed our schedule. Instead of being out on Friday the 16th, we're now going to have that as the legislative day to make up for not being here on Monday.
Okay. So the governor gave his State of the State speech, and
we did.
And it was pretty fiery. It was really, like, you know, some of the criticism of it was that it was kind of dissing the Biden administration a little bit.
It was a little too political. I mean, it's been interesting because in years past, the State of the State is almost warm and fuzzy, right? Like, you as the governor want to talk about how great things are, how great the state's doing, how much you love Georgia, all of those things, you know, go dogs, whatever. And I think the interesting thing about the tone, the tonality of this speech was that it was overtly partisan and specifically overtly partisan attacking the Biden administration. And it's almost like a tale of two cities, right? It's like a tale of two states. According to Republicans and to Governor Kemp, everything that's great or things are great, but it's because of them. But then everything's awful. And if it is awful, then it's because of Biden. And it's weird to even kind of bring it all together, because you can't say things are great and I'm get all the credit, but then everything else sucks and it's all because of Biden. But I think what it shows is that the governor, this is not the end of his political career. He's not going to go you know, and leave the governor's mansion and just kind of relax and go into retirement. He's basically showing that he's getting ready for kind of a next political fight. And it really does look like at the federal level. And who knows if it really is about also, remember, is this a lot of this, nobody really knew how the Haley-Trump thing was going to show up. Some of this is about trying out to be a VP or get the VP nod in terms of whoever the Republican nominee is. So I think maybe he was hoping he would get the nod from Haley. But we'll see. Terry, what are your thoughts on it?
No, my thoughts were that I've never heard Washington referred to quite that much in one State of the State speech. It was the kind of speech you would give if you were trying to get a nod to be vice president, but it also could be the kind of speech you might give if you are possibly thinking about a statewide Senate run in a couple of years. Like you're trying to establish that narrative, you know, and this was his narrative. Washington is broken. Georgia's great. And it really did not get into the weeds of the policies that have come from Washington that have helped Georgia thrive and also funneled millions and millions and millions of dollars into Georgia's economy that we are able to then use to create jobs and do things and build battery factories, for example, and take all the credit for them and get upset when the president wants to take credit too, even though the president deserves a tremendous amount of the credit for these federal policies that then encourage these battery manufacturers, for example, to want to make their batteries and then they can come to Georgia.
Yeah, that was a definitely something that made a lot of news. Also, definitely want to talk about Esther Panich and her anti-Semitism resolution that seemed to pass through flying colors and her unlikely friendship with a Republican House member. Terry, can you talk a little bit more about that?
So yes, Esther Panich, who has been on the show before, she co-sponsored the anti-Semitism resolution with State Representative John Carson, who is in Cobb County. And there is a not insignificant Jewish population in his district. And Representative Panich, of course, is the only Jewish member of the General Assembly right now. And the reality is that we have had a real uptick in anti-Semitism throughout Georgia. I know in Cobb County alone, just in the past few months, we've had Nazis come and wave flags in front of a synagogue. We've had Nazis broadcast slogans on an interstate overpass. For some reason, there are these groups of hateful people who are very anti-Semitic and who I think it's fair to call Nazis, and they are proliferating in Georgia. And so I think it is important that we send a message that message is absolutely not acceptable. And I think that, you know, having this resolution, and I did vote for this resolution. I voted for it last year when it was in the House. They made some changes in the Senate and it came back over to the House this week, really just for an agree disagree. But it is interesting because in the Senate is where a lot of fascinating things happened, namely that one of the big opponents of the bill, Senator Ed Setzler, who is also from Cobb County, had been fervently opposed to the resolution all last session. And apparently something happened to help change his mind because he did vote yes when it was in the Senate. And so, of course, now the conversation has turned to, okay, what deal was made and what might be coming down the pipeline.
Well, and this isn't the first time it's you know, been there. I mean, Mike Walensky, when he was in the State House, he was able to get it over the line and get it out of the House last time, and it got stopped in the Senate by Republicans. And they did not want to see it go anywhere and were very vocally against it in the Senate. And so it's interesting now that, and you're talking about Setzler, that they think that it's, I would like to think it's because it's the right thing, right? But normally they see that it's politically expedient one way or the other, and they haven't just kind of seen the light all of a sudden. But it is kind of an interesting thing because you have Republicans who are stopping it and preventing it from going anywhere when I was in the State Senate. And now you have Representative Panich, who really has partnered with certain Republicans to get it over the line at this point. So you know, I think it'll be interesting to see kind of what comes out of this ultimately. And really, I understand about sending the message and stuff, but I would be interested to see if there are any, you know, prosecutions or efforts to really battle affirmatively anti-Semitism that come about because of the bill.
Yeah, I wondered that too, and we've discussed this on this podcast where, look, the front runner who is going to be the presidential nominee dines with Holocaust deniers. So the candidate that they're all getting behind can actively flirt with white nationalism pretty regularly. So a lot of that is, well, I feel like the effort is amazing. We have to keep things local. I always kind of wonder about that.
Well, they want to have it both ways.
Right? Yes.
It's like, well, Trump's the standard bearer of the party. But like, you know, oh, look at us, we're so reasonable and awesome. And
his daughter, Ivanka's Jewish. She converted. That cancels everything out. So yes. Okay. So while we're on the topic of the presidential race, South Carolina, you know, when this drops, we're going to be like leading right into South Carolina. And, you know, all of this Nikki Haley stuff has been so fascinating to me on every level. We haven't talked about like the whole Tim Scott thing is just really melting my brain on every level, mostly with how he like magically like endorsed Trump and then has a fiance. And I did a lot of deep diving on trying to figure out what this, like, there's a big text thread the three of us have. I'm like, she has no followers. She just like started her Instagram page. But, and I say in a world of, you know, Tim Scott's be a Liz Cheney, I don't know what's happening to these people. And Nikki Haley, like, what's next for her? And this is, I want you both to weigh on this, because what's next for her? Because clearly it's over for her, right? It's over. So at this point, you know, does she endorse Trump or is she still going to keep dissing and be Liz Cheney? What do we think?
I think Haley can't. I mean, and she's upped her rhetoric, and I think it's smart. I think she's getting really good advice, because really you're trying to bait him. I mean, anybody who does even a cursory psychosocial on the guy knows exactly how to press his buttons. And at the end of the day, people like Nikki Haley, right? Like, she comes across.
Yes, I think she's very likable.
People like her. She doesn't seem to offend anybody unless you know her policies. But nobody seems to care about policies anymore. So, you know, and she's also baiting him in a way that's not angry, you know what I'm saying? To fall into kind of the whole angry woman.
Yeah, it's good. Like, I actually feel like besides the Civil War stuff, she has actually been running a pretty tight campaign from like a media optics standpoint. And here's the thing. And then let me just say this, and I'll throw it to you, Terry. I feel like the Republicans have such a formidable candidate. She is got everything. She's got experience. She is likable. She is, would be the most incredible rebrand.
She's a woman of color.
You know, for the Republican Party. What do you mean we don't like women? We're bringing you potentially the first woman president. And you would think that they would, if I'm at the casino table, I put all my chips on her.
I mean, if anyone else besides Trump were up on the ballot with her, I think she'd be the one to beat. But yeah, this is Trump.
I think she would be very, very difficult for Democrats to beat. And, you know, it's interesting that Republicans have basically, or at least Trump's Republican Party has chosen to ignore that and instead put him at the top again. And while all at the same time, he's facing all of these criminal prosecutions, these civil cases, you know, and it's not getting better. He's not becoming a better candidate. He's not, you know, there aren't any, like, what are his friggin' policies? it's he talks about the border, but really it's stop whatever Biden's doing because, you know, I don't want him to be successful. I mean, it's just, it really is a cult of personality with them.
What are the Republican Party's policies, right? They don't have a platform.
No, you're right. I mean, it used to be very clear, right? Low taxes,
right?
Limited government.
Yeah.
All that.
They no longer have a platform. It's just Trump.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's interesting. And of course, you know, I've spared both of you my legal questions about the E. Jean Carroll case, which is just like that. Like she, I've always been a fan of hers. I used to read Ask E. Jean in Elle magazine, you know, like when I was in my 20s, I would look at that and I really have to give it to her. So Jen, I'm curious, like those lawyers, that Roberta Kaplan, I mean, what a lady crush on those lawyers. So he can't say anything anymore because they'll sue him again, right?
Well, look, I think the thing that Kaplan was dealing with and that what all lawyers deal with, because look, lawyers are by training and trade institutionalists and rule followers. Because that is what we do, right? We know the rules, we can interpret the rules, we apply the rules, the law, all of that. And that's what happens in court too. So it's very difficult when you have someone like Trump who doesn't seem to think that the rules apply to him at all, even inside the courtroom, right? Like he's attacking the judges to their face. There are outbursts in court. He's been told not to do specific things or say specific things. And he's basically given them the finger. And I think that this case was important. And I think it was important for different reasons, maybe at the outset. But now really it's been important just to show that a case could go from beginning to end and hold him responsible and have him come into court, right? And rules apply to him. And whether he sits there and yells and says they don't apply or not, then they are applied to him. I think that's important for purposes of the rule of law and for saying, if our democracy is going to be able to make it through this, I mean, our institutions have to be able to handle this man baby who has more power than anybody else seemingly in the world. So I think, you know, some really impressive work by lawyers, and they stuck to it because that was not popular. I imagine that she's with a big firm, right? Like a big corporate firm, they have big corporations that are their clients, all that kind of stuff. To do what she did and to stick with it when I'm sure there was major pressure put on her and major pressure put on her firm, it was really, really significant and huge kudos to her and for just bringing it home, ultimately, at the end of the day. And the number's not bad either, right?
Well, I love how she's planning on, Jean keeps saying that they're going to use that money for some of the other victims as far as like, could they, I guess it was, does that depend on the statute of limitation and the, cause, you know, let's not forget, there were, you know, over a dozen accusers of sexual assault from former President Trump. So just
with most of them, the statutes run unless, like we've seen recently in California, they reopened the statute for like a year. That's why we saw all of those cases get filed against, I think, who are some of the bigger
Boy Scouts
that got tagged?
Oh, good old Boy Scouts, right.
I mean, it's in California, they did it in Georgia. They did it a few years ago in New York. They did it for a period of time. And the whole idea is, look, let's give people the ability to come forth now and bring these claims. But for finality reasons, you know, it closes down as of December 31st or whatever. So, you know, we'll see. But he kind of stepped into it with the defamation, though, right? Because that's how they got him. It wasn't necessarily the assault. It was the defamation. It was a case within a case. So for folks who don't just love the law, defamation is basically truth is the defense, right? So she says he defamed her because he said he didn't sexually assault her. So what she has to prove is that he did, that is the truth. And so basically, she had to prove the sexual assault in order to be able to bring home the defamation. And, you know, they were able to do that. And I think that a lot of people, a lot of women feel vindicated because they really, not just for the Trump stuff, but just for a woman finally being able to do that in a way that resulted in a significant verdict against a man who was seen as untouchable. And is still seen as untouchable.
Right. Like Terry, you know, it seems like a lot of those lawmakers at the Capitol are they're dial back in to Trump again. They're like full on. I mean, nothing seems to matter.
The DeSantis people are very quiet right now. They're also, it's interesting to see a lot of the things like policy things that DeSantis had kind of pushed through in Florida, like tort reform, we're not talking about at all anymore. And it's funny, even this summer, the governor was talking about how this session was going to be the session of tort reform. And then right before the session, he was like, well, you know, there's a lot of stuff involved with that. And we probably can't do it all.
I didn't make the connection. Hmm. I never made that connection. I just assumed it's like what they always do. They, you know, they say that. So then the trial lawyers will give the governor a bunch of money and then he backs off.
Well, and maybe there's not a connection, but I know that DeSantis rammed it through in Florida. Insurance rates have not gone down, and DeSantis isn't going to be president. So
ever.
Maybe that's not the path.
Ever.
Him and his weird little smile can just hang out in Panama City. I don't know where he hangs out. I'm assuming Panama City.
I mean,
I wonder if we see his wife again, though. She seems to be the one that's ready for prime time.
Yes, she is. I mean, you know, listen, the thing is they just, these people, if you're going to stay in the right wing echo chamber, the idea is, and that's like the thing with Nikki Haley, like, you know, and it's interesting because Nas Francis made this point, you know, he's our local Politico. And he was like, you know, because Nikki Haley went on the Breakfast Club and she's like, I don't think many Nikki Haley voters are on the Breakfast Club. But I actually thought that was a really smart booking for her, because even though she kind of got dragged a little bit by those guys, that's a very tough room. So I give anybody credit for being willing to go on there. But when you're DeSantis, you can't, you know, he went to the mainstream outlets way too late, and he just doesn't have charm, as we all know.
No, he doesn't have charm.
Well, you want me to tell you who has charm? Finally, I have some political one-upsmanship for you two ladies, and I'm going to do it now. I'm going to beat my chest because I spent the afternoon with Senator Joe Manchin.
Oh, Joe.
So I will disclose that I am booking the talent for Monica Pearson's fabulous show with the AJC, which you can all watch. But they did an AJC town hall, which you can also watch at AJC.com, with Greg Bluestein, our friend of the show, interviewed Senator Manchin. And it's my job to make sure, like, what time is he coming? What does he need? Making sure everybody in his party, where, you know, all the, like, basically, like, from start to finish, making sure he's okay. Well, this was my favorite part of the whole thing. He gets there right on time. His handler's great.
Oh, you love that.
Yeah. Oh, right. Like, it was like the thing started at 3:30. He got there at like 3:25. Like it was almost like they were waiting around the corner. They didn't want any extra time to lollygag. But before he went on with Greg, he was like, where am I again? What is this? I'm like, Georgia State University. What is this? Greg Bluestein. You know, it's like, you know, when like Madonna goes out in concert and the tour manager's like, hello, you say hello, New York. Like they don't know where they are because they're just being thrown around. Anyway, he couldn't have been any nicer. He does the town hall, which you can all watch. And honestly, the town hall, like the one thing that he said that was like spicy was he talked about Supreme Court term limits. And he had never talked about that before. And he said there should be an 18-year term limit on...
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. And then the other thing was he... you know, everybody was like, are you running? Are you not running? Like, I put the picture of him on my social media and some people were like, oh, that's cool. People were just, you know, giving me a hard time, like, oh, don't give this guy a platform kind of thing. Cause he's, you know, he's a ruiner. I don't know what he's trying to do, but I know he did this event and it was good. But this was the best part. After the, you can think what you want of him and that's fine. But after the town hall, there was a little like meet and greet with the students, which he didn't have to do. He could have left, but he stayed there. He talked with all the students. They had a nice catering. It was like Publix catering. He was like eating the pinwheels. And then of course, like, and there was like time to talk to him. So I asked him, I was like, do you know Baby Dog? And that's Governor Jim Justice, big bulldog. And I was like, what about Baby Dog? And he was like, that dog is so fat, it can't even breathe. And clearly those two do not like each other, because he was like, because, you know, Jim Justice is running for senator in West Virginia. And that's why Jim, you know, Manchin isn't running. And so we just talked about that, but he was eating those pinwheels. He was hungry and he was so personable with every one of those students, a true politician, but it seemed effortless for him. He was clearly a pro, whether, you know, whatever, forget all the policies or whatever, but as far as like in a social situation, he was pretty great. And that's the story.
Look, I think, like when you come from a place like West Virginia, it is about kind of the retail politics and being someone who likes being around all types of people. It's not about being a superstar or being the richest person or the person on TV or whatever. And that's why he has been a really successful politician in West Virginia. He knows his state. He's brought home the bacon. He really has. I mean, and what will be interesting is if he does, I kind of feel like maybe he's trying to figure it out. So maybe he's doing a few of these things just to kind of keep his name out there or keep the engine running a little bit. But the question is, what could he really do? I mean, at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, Greg was... definitely, you know, and Greg's so great. It's kind of funny, like doing the rehearsals with that. And, you know, Greg does a great job. And of course, that was the number one question. Like, why are you here? What are you doing? Like, what's going on?
I love Atlanta.
But I mean, it was pretty cool.
No, look, you got to hang out with a U.S. senator. It's most people don't get to meet U.S. senators, and especially somebody like Manchin, who's very well known and who's played such a pivotal role in so many ways in the last decade by providing like the vote that really has delivered for people in this country. So people can smack talk and don't give them a platform. I mean, gosh, we are just...
I got a lot of that. Like a couple of my friends who I'm not going to mention, like, we're just like, I can't even believe that. And I was like, look, I don't, you know, because I put it on my Instagram.
It's like you've had cooties or something, but he's a U.S. senator.
Right.
Right. He's a respected U.S. senator. And it's like, just get over it. Why are we like this?
Well, and also let's be realistic and pragmatic, right? Like, this is a United States senator who is elected statewide as a Democrat in a deeply red state. I mean, it's the same thing with Governor Beshear in Kentucky. He is a Democrat. He has been elected statewide in a deeply red state. And if we're going to be completely pragmatic about this, we as Democrats need to take seriously the Democrats who can get elected in red states.
Yeah. So, well, and some people are saying that that's why he's not running, because he clearly can't win in West Virginia anymore simply because he has a D next to his name. Do you think that's
and
true?
That's probably true. And maybe... Yeah. We Democrats or Democrats out there, look, there's going to be a lot of kind of soul searching in terms of, you know, who are we as a party when We don't just have Trump to focus on. And we can't just keep saying, you know, not that person, not that person, or not that person, or that person doesn't speak for me, or whatever. It's like, you know, we're not in power,
right?
Especially in Georgia. So why are we like being the kind of these folks that are like, yeah, whatever.
Right. Why do we think we have the luxury to be Goldilocks?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, Barry. Yeah. So that was a really eye-opening experience to work with him for the day. And I think the AJC is probably going to do more of that. So it'd be interesting. Like, I'd be curious. Listen, I have been really fascinated with the whole Nikki Haley journey. And if she came to do that, I'd be fascinated mostly. Like, I'm fascinated with the little things. I want to know who her stylist is and how they're picking out her outfits, because I think her wardrobe has been interesting. I think it's really well thought out.
Interesting, good or bad? Like,
I think
interesting is such a word.
I don't know. Like, remember when Sarah Palin was running with John McCain and people were like, oh, her clothes are from Neiman Marcus. And like, oh, can you believe all the money she spent? I'm like, yeah, spend that money. She looked great. Like, appearance is important. But I think with Haley, it's all kind of like, they're making sure it doesn't look too like couture. It's like a little more Macy's and less Neiman Marcus. Does that make sense?
Right. It's not. Yes, it's not Pelosi going to the Chanel boutique at Tyson's Corner.
Oh, well, she always. I mean, Nancy Pelosi. I mean, her outfits are just on point.
Impeccable.
But you know what? Even Liz Cheney, to her credit, always looks fabulous. She is. Blue is her color. She's always wearing blue.
Well, this is part of it, right, Jen? We've talked about this, and Jen, we've talked about how we pick our outfits out. I mean, you've got to think about that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, listen, Liz Cheney has one of the best blonde colorists. And Jen and I share the same hair colorist, Brett Barker. And we both agree. We all agree that she has a good colorist.
She does. Brett is the god of blondes.
She does.
I love him. I love you. I love you, Brett.
We love him. I'm going to see him tomorrow. Thank God. All right. Listen, I think with all of our problems, we've done pretty well. What are we raving about this week? Anybody want to go there? You got a thing you want to rave about?
So I'm going to rave about the fact that my son covered the primary in New Hampshire for Boston University Radio. And had a great time and took all these pictures, including one with George Santos.
Oh, George Santos.
Lawton said was just wandering around through the crowd and then would like lose it when anybody recognized him, wanted to take a photo and be like, stop following me. So it was very, he said, I don't even know why he was there. And I was like, because he wants the attention, right? But what a great opportunity for Lawton to really see up close and personal exactly kind of how the sausage is made, and you know, got to see all of the big Republican candidates. So great opportunity for him.
Love that. Terry?
Oh God, what am I going to rave about? I should have thought about this.
Well,
the first,
Terry's
honestly, the first thing that comes into my head is my sofa, because I've have blessed little time on my sofa these days, and what time I do have, I really treasure spending time on my sofa now.
I know. Well, I am going to rave about a book, because again, ever since Terry said she read 58 books in 1 year, I want to chase her, which is why I'm listening to all my books at like 1.5 speed. This book called Wellness by Nathan Hill is a journey. It's so intense. It's not what you think it is. It's not about wellness. I don't like self-help shit at all. People are like, you've got to listen to self-help. I don't like self-help. I'm not into it. This is not that. It's a really complicated, layered story. And it had me truly captivated over the holidays reading it. I really, really loved it. The book is called wellness. And also, while we're on the topic, because I love content, season 5 of Fargo is just, yes. Jen, you would really like it.
I have just discovered Fargo as of last night. So,
season 5.
I'm watching it, and I've heard season 5 is off the chain, so I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, the first couple of episodes, I thought it was almost a little bit too on the nose, but I stayed with it, and I'm glad I did. But yeah, back to wellness, especially if you are a Gen X person, it is very specific about the 90s and the late 90s, and just that whole falling in love in the late 90s, or mid 90s, but just doing that, doing all of these life things without social media, and it's a very good telling of that tale.
Yeah, it really just, I know Terry's very busy like legislating at the Capitol, but I had to blow her up and be like, can we talk about this book? Because it's like, that's like the perfect book club book, right?
It is. Oh, and I do have a rave. And it's a book, Mr. Texas by Lawrence Wright. It's a work of fiction by Lawrence Wright. I've read several of his works of nonfiction, including his great book about Scientology. He is a writer, staff writer on The New Yorker, but he lives in Texas, and he's written a nonfiction book called God Save Texas. But this book is called Mr. Texas, and it is about a rural guy who never wanted to be in politics, and this lobbyist convinces him to run for the state house. It's a really, really, really fun, smart analysis of state legislative politics. There are a lot of definitely things that are analogous between Georgia and Austin and Georgia and Texas. But it was fun, and I highly recommend it. And Mr. Texas.
I just added it to my wish list. I met a lobbyist, Brian Hudson. And it's funny when I meet a lobbyist or somebody from the state house, I always brag that we do all do a podcast together.
Well, you know, he's a musician.
Yes, I know.
Yes, so because he was the band, he was in Memory Dean, which was like the big frat party band in the mid 90s at Georgia Tech.
Well, I didn't care about that.
Was he Memory or Dean?
I don't know. He was the drummer.
He could have been Memory Dean. Memory Dean was like, they were like this little acoustic thing.
I do remember that.
They played at Georgia Tech.
Well, because
Georgia Tech. Yes, Terry, I do know. I do have memories of Memory Dean and Memory and Dean, but not no Brian Hudson playing in a drum.
Well, so. I'm sure he'll be very happy for the shout out because I had emceed the Atlanta chapter Recording Academy party because I serve on the board, and he was there and gave a little speech about like all the advocacy. I know it sounds a little braggy. Listen, for once I dealt with a big Senator Joe Manchin.
You are the big.
Yeah, no.
I mean, no, I've listen. Got like a dog that snores. That's about all that's going on
listen,
in my life.
If you could only see how many texts saying, oh, we're doing the podcast today. We're doing the podcast today. And it almost didn't happen today. And look, all the sound seemed to work itself out.
We'll see what Christina
we'll say.
All right. Well, give us, and dear listeners, we've been all with crazy schedules. We're really, once Harry's out of session, I'm pretty confident we can get back to the weekly sessions and stuff like that. But thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time. It will be soon. I'll make sure of it just because I'm that way.